Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah, Daf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the top of the upper part of Daf Tes Zayin in Maseches Avodah Zarah, we notice in the outside margin of our pre-marked Gemaras a title heading that denotes say, Mechiras Barzel Legoy, the sale of iron to an idol worshipper. The general issue that we've been touching upon has to do with the sales of weaponry to Goyim, and of course involved in that consideration is will it be used eventually against us? So we saw in the Gemara numerous restrictions with regard to the sales of dangerous implements or weaponry to Goyim. Continuing in that vein, we have the Gemara about 5 lines from the top. Omar Rav Ado Bar Avo, Ein Moichrin Lohen Ashoshius Shel Barzel, that we are restricted from selling heavy pieces of iron to the Gentiles. My Taimo, why is that? Mishum Dechalshi Minayu Kled Zayin, because they form from it weaponry. Ihochi, if that be the concern, Afilu Mori V'Chatzini Nami, then there should be a restriction against sales of shovels and chatzini, other types of cutting implements, and yet we don't find any such restriction. Omarav Zvid, Beparzula Hindua. The restriction mentioned above of sales of Ashoshia Shabarzel indicated Hindua iron. The significance of that is it is used exclusively for the formation of weaponry. That's what's forbidden. But nowadays that we do find ourselves selling these to the Gentiles, Amrav Ashi leParsoi, we sell them to, and Rav Ashi is talking about his region, and he was with the Persian Empire. He said we sell this to the Persians, the Magnu Iluvon, they protect us. The Tosfos at the top has an interesting note. Le Parsoi de Magnu Alon, Venira de Ananami, Tosfos is saying that we too, Sharinon Hashto Limkor Livdi Kochavim Klei Zayin, we can allow ourselves the leniency of selling arms to the Gentiles. Mehai Taima, for this reason, so that if you have a government that helps to defend the Jewish community, then, according to Tosfos, there's a heter to sell that type of government and their army arms. Agolim Usyochim. The Mishnah made reference to the sale or the prohibition of selling these creatures. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Matir Bishvura. Rabbi Yehuda allows the sale of Behema Gasas that are broken, or is they are broken limbed. She'eno yecholo lehisrapus lichios. It can't, it won't heal and continue living. Rashi points out she'eno yecholo lehisrapus umistamo lishchitos avno. It most likely that if a Jew sells a broken limbed behemo gasa, large animal like a cow or an ox that's broken limb to the Gentile, he most likely bought it for meat purposes. V'lo mashile, he's not going to leave it around. V'lo chazile Yisrael bei oivei kuchovim tetepo churbo minei lezvunei shlema. And by the fact that he's going to probably slaughter it very shortly, it's not going to be hanging around or delaying in the house of the Gentile, which would lead to a mistake on the part of other Jews that see the formerly owned Jewish animal in the house of the Goy. They might have been misled to think that it's allowed in general to sell these animals to the goyim, but since he will most likely slaughter it immediately, there's no problem. Omrulo, we turning back to the Gemara, the Rabbonin responded, "Valo marbian olea violetis." The cave on the marbian olea violetis osu lishuya. Marbian olea has to do with one can mate another creature with this broken limb creature, and it will, even though it can't, it won't be used for malacha, it nevertheless might be used for offspring raising, and as a result of that, he will delay it around for the purposes of raising animals through it. And by it being delayed and left in his home, the problem that was just alluded to before in the Rashi will resurface, that people will think that it's mutter to sell, in general, even healthy animals. Omar Lahan, Rabbi Yehuda responded, "If that's your whole concern, well, I have news for you. L'cheshetele. I'll worry about that when it gives birth." Alma lo mekabel azocher. You can see from his comment that if it's a broken-limbed animal, it probably will not mate with a male, and hence won't ever come to a situation where it's going to be fit for producing offspring. Hence, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the sale is allowed of a shvura because he will probably slaughter it quickly. Ben Besera matir besus. Ben Besera allows the sales of horses. Tanya, Ben Besera, and you might want to draw our attention to the double underlining that you see here. This is to highlight the two shitas that are in this source that argue with one another, namely Ben Besera and Rebbe. Ben Besera, it says here, Matir Besus allows the sale of horses to the goyim, because, as we've discussed in a previous sugya, the horse, when put into action, so to speak, it serves as a creature of transportation, of riding. One rides horses. Riding a horse on Shabbos is, though, forbidden. It's not something that, if done, would generate the obligation to bring a korban chatas. Namely, it's an iser d'rabbanan, and as a prohibition, as far as being a as a result of being a rabbinic prohibition, namely riding an animal on Shabbos, if it's violated, it doesn't result in the need to bring a korban chatas, a chatas sacrifice, if violated unwittingly. As a result of that, the whole realm of fear, of suspicion that arose in the realm of selling behema gases to goyim, the whole issue of the animal doing malacha on Shabbos, that falls away, because even if it would come to being ridden on Shabbos, that wouldn't be considered a malacha. Our explanation now is a rather brief explanation, because we're assuming that the one who is listening to this year has already seen the sugyas before. The Rebbe Oser Mitnei Shnei Dvarim. Rebbe forbids the sale of even horses to the goyim. Echad, he forbids it because of two considerations, and they're listed here. Echad Mishum Teras Kli Zayin. One is because the horse can actually be used as a weapon. It stamps upon the enemy. The echad mishum turas behema gasa, and one because of it being categorized as a behema gasa. So the Gemara, in analyzing Rebbe's position, says bishlamo turas kli zayin ika. I understand very well the concept of kli zayin, of it being viewed as an arm, as a weapon. There is such a thing. The kotil bishufe, it can kill with its hooves. Eloturas behema gaso mahi. What is the categorizing of a horse as a behema gaso? Bearing in mind that we said before, a horse is designed for riding purposes, not for malocha purposes, not for constructive activity. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan answers, l'chshiyaskin, when the horse gets old, and no longer suitable for galloping around and serving as a means of transportation, matchino berechayim b'shabbos, it can be attached to a grinder, and the horse will walk around and around while attached to a grinder, and that is a forbidden activity on Shabbos. That's an av malocha, as opposed to riding. And that's what's meant by Turas Behema Gasa. It'll be viewed as a standard Behema Gasa when it gets older. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Halocha Keben Besera. Rabbi Yochanan rules leniently that a Jew is allowed to sell a horse to Goyim as opposed to selling oxen. Ibai Eloho, we have a question that's presented by the Gemara. It's an Aleph Odilma B's form question. You'll notice that it's through the markings, it's a long question. As you can see, there's a shin that's encircled, indicating a she'ila question, and a vertical dashed line, indicating the length of it. Namely, all of the lines of the Gemara that are opposite this dashed vertical line form the question. The second part of the question is the Odilma. The second side of the question appears toward the end of this long question. It's the beginning of the line, a few lines down, you see the Odilma expression, squiggled underline, introducing the second side of this inquiry. On the side of our Gemara, we have a Noseya topic heading, Mahu Limkor Shor Shel Patam Legoy. Is one allowed to sell an ox that was fattened up for meat purposes? Can one now sell that fattened up ox to a Gentile? The Gemara continues. Ibai Eloho, Shor Shel Patam Mahu. Patam is a person whose job is to fatten up animals. And as such, as it is now a fattened up creature, it's not fit for malacha. It's not fit for doing activities that would be prohibited on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that this question can be raised to according to two authorities that we've seen on this topic in general. Tiboya le Rabbi Yehuda, we can ask this question according to Rabbi Yehuda, who represents a leniency with regard to the sale of broken-limbed animals. Still, even though we know of a leniency with regard to the sale of Shavura, will that apply over here? Tiboya le Rabbonan, and we can raise this question according to the Rabbonan that do not allow the sale of broken-limbed animals. It could be that even though that they forbid, this, the case of the Shor Shel Patam, they will allow. The Gemara now elaborates. And with our markings, you can see we've introduced Tiboya le Rabbi Yehuda with a dashed underline, and that means the question can be raised, our question of Shor Shel Patam can be raised according to Rabbi Yehuda, who with regard to Shavura is in fact lenient. What about over here? And likewise, it could be to the other extreme, that even according to the Rabbanan, and that's part of the Odilma toward the end of this long question, where we've dashed underlined the expression Lirabbanan, and it indicated that's Beis, the second side. And it could be that the issue here can be raised according to them, that though they are in general restrictive with regard to Shivura, maybe over here with regard to Patam, there is room for leniency. So let's continue with the Gemara. Tiboya le Rabbi Yehuda. Ad kan lo koshori Rabbi Yehuda ela b'shavura. Tiboy means we can ask the question according to Rabbi Yehuda. It could be that up till this point, Rabbi Yehuda's leniency is only with regard to a shavura, the lo osi l'chlal mechlat locha, because it will never come to a situation of it being able to do malacha. It's broken limbed. Aval hai, the fattened up ox, dechi mashide osi l'chlal malacha osir. If you were to leave it around and stop fattening it up, it will lose weight. And as a reduced weight creature, an ox that went on a diet, this will in fact come to be able to do malacha. Right now in its obese or corpulent state, it's incapable of doing malacha. Once it reduces weight, it will become capable, and that would be grounds for forbidding its sale. Oidilma, afilu the Rabbonan, or possibly even according to the Rabbonan, lo ko asri hasam elo destame lav l'shchita koi. The reason that they forbid the sale of the shavura is because it, in general, is not it's not, a shvura is not something that was, let's say, prepared for the purposes of slaughtering. It happened to be a working animal that just broke a limb. Aval hai, but the shor shel patom, the stami lishchitakoi, it's designed, so to speak, for slaughtering. It's been fattened up over the last period of time for this specific purpose. So it could be afilu rabbonan shor, even the rabbonan that are strict with regard to the shvura, to the broken limb creature, here they may be lenient. Ta shma, the Gemara raises presents an attempt to answer it. This is also something that lasts a couple of lines. You'll see around five lines. To the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, you'll notice a tuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating the length of this response. So, Toshma di Omar Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel, Shel Beis Rebbe, the household of Rebbe Yudah Nasi, Hoyu Makriven Shor Shel Patam Biyoim Edom. They used to donate or dedicate a fattened up ox to the goyim, to the Gentiles, on their holiday. Choser arba rivon she'ein makrivin oisayim elamocher. He spent another 400 units of money to influence them, the goyim that he sent it to, not to sacrifice it today, but rather tomorrow when it's no longer the holiday. Choser dalet rivon shein makrivin zochai ela shochut. Then it was another amount paid, a bribe, if you will, or a payment to the goyim, that it wouldn't be given to them, it wouldn't be offered to them alive, but rather already as meat. So they wouldn't be able to, they would simply be receiving meat from Beis Rebbe and not a live animal, and hence they wouldn't be able to, let's say, slaughter it for the Avodah Zorah. And finally, Choser Dalet Rivon, an additional 400 units of money, She'ein Makrivin Oisoi Kol Iker, so as to relieve Beis Rebbe from needing to give it whatsoever. Why was there such an effort made to prevent this from the animal being given to them whatsoever? Mishum dilma, lav mishum dilma osi l'shuye. Is it not because there's a fear they may leave it around? Well, if that's the consideration, it would then be a ruling l'chumra, a ruling that even according to Rabbi Yehuda that we saw above was lenient with regard to shvura, here he would not allow it because of this fear that they may leave it around and then a Jew will come by and see the formerly Jewish owned animal in the possession of the goy and will come to an incorrect conclusion that it's mutter in general to sell behema gasas to goyim. Well, if you want to come to that conclusion by this particular incident involving the Beis Rebbe, v'litamech, according to you, v'litamech, what about the stage of the story that said the following, she'ein makriven oisoi hayoim elo lemochor, my taimo, they paid for it to be delayed. How can you explain that? If you want to conclude that Rebbe's behavior there was to prevent the giving over of the animal to the goyim because they may keep it around, but at one stage in the story they actually paid money to have it left around till the next day. Elo, Rebbe mi'akir milsovoi. Rebbe's intention was really to uproot the whole practice of the goyim coming to his house seeking out behemoths. V'sovar ya'akir the osi porta porta. Rebbe figures that if you want to stop a practice, you want to stop the Gentile practice of taking animals from the Beis Rebbe, you can only accomplish that if you do it in a stage by stage fashion. So that the Beis Rebbe was offering this the monies to the Gentiles in order to totally uproot their coming to him for the animal in the first place. But as far as bringing a raya to the issue of delaying the animal around, no, Rebbe's intention was to uproot the practice entirely. The Gemara asks, "V'chi mashi lei, if you have a fattened up animal and you keep it around till it loses weight, bori v'ovid melacha, will it be capable? Will it be helpful and capable of doing melacha?" Amar Rav Ashi, Amar li zavida. Zavida was the name of an animal that was that as his preoccupation, he would fatten them up. So Zavida once told me, says Rav Ashi, bar tura mashinon lei, an ox, that if you leave it around till it loses weight, the ovid al-chad train, it eventually will work better than two other regular oxen. The Mishnah: Ein moichrin lohem dubin varoyos v'chol dover sheyesh bo nezek l'rabim. One is not allowed to sell to the Gentiles these type of dangerous creatures. Dubin varoyos, sometimes translated as bears and lions, and nor anything else that poses a danger to the public. Ein boinin imoem besilki gardom itstadia ubima. One is not allowed to assist in the building or the construction of these structures. The Rashi describes these structures, and what seems to be a common denominator to all of them is that they were used in the context of executing individuals. So these structures that were used in the context of executing people, one, a Jew is not allowed to build for the Goyim. Avol boinim imoyim bimosios ubeis merchotzos. These things a person is allowed to build for the goyim. The bimosios may be some type of a base or a what appears to be like a what Rashi calls a boma shel even. A structure that you would be able to go on top of it, a type of stage possibly. So these things a person is allowed to help in their construction. If when building a bathhouse gets to the point at which there was a certain domed section that they used to stand in that domed section an idol, so the Mishnah says Osir Livnos. If he gets to that kippah, that dome section, he is no longer allowed to continue in building the structure. Omar Rav Chonon bar Rav Chisda v'Amri lo. Another version is Omar Rav Chonon bar Rova. Omar Rav Chayo Gaso Harehi Kibehemo Dako Lepirchus Avoloi L'mechira. A chayogasa, a large undomesticated animal, is viewed lahalocha as a behema daka with regard to halochas concerning pirchus, which is in the realm of shchita, but it's not viewed as a behema daka with regard to sales. Rather, it's going to be considered like a gasa, and therefore it will be forbidden always to sell to the goyim a chaya gasa. The Ani Omer, up till this point, it was Rav Chonon quoting Rav. A second opinion is Rav Chonon himself, says, Af l'mechira. It's going to be viewed as a behema daka with regard to sales as well. Namely, Mokum Shinogu Limkor Mochrin, places where the custom was to sell the behema dakas, the light cattle, to the Gentiles, so the Chayagasas one would also be allowed to sell, and Shelo Limkor Ein Mochrin. If the minig is in a particular community is not to sell behema dakas, So then one would not sell the Chaya Gasa either. In the context of our shiur, we're not going to delve into the description of the halachas of Pirchus and Hilchus Shechita. Rashi elaborates on that over here, but because our sugya is focused on the sales of these animals as opposed to halachas of Shechita, we will continue. Before we go ahead in the Gemara, we want to point out a certain structural element of the coming up sugya. And we'll do this with reference to our note on the side. As one glances at the Gemara, he immediately encounters a bow tie form. We'll also be indicating to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara the number of these bow ties that appear in the Gemara. These are explained on the outside margin under the heading Nosei Mivneh. The triangle we've already encountered. We can read our note. Machloikis Rav V'Rav Chonon Im Chaya Gasa Kebehema Daka Oy Gasa Legabi Mechira. How does one view the halacha concerning a large undomesticated creature? Is it viewed as a behema daka or a behema gasa with regard to sales? Not forgetting that a behema gasa is something that's forbidden to sell to the Gentiles. The bow ties represent shalosh l'shoinois benoisei mechiras chayos legoyim. We're going to have three versions or three presentations of this topic, three different ways of presenting this topic in the upcoming section of Gemara. Heora means we have a note here. Lishonos 1 and 3, that means bow ties numbers 1 and 3, mityachasim lemachloikis Rav v'Rav Chonon, will make reference to that particular controversy between Rav and Rav Chonon. This is as opposed to Losha number 2, where their machlokes will not be featured. In Losha number 1 itself, as after we made note of the triangles being a reference to Rav and Rav Chonon, we have in Loshen number 1 the use of a house marking, a house form. At one point, the point will be the roof of the house, if you will, is pointing upwards. That will be a kasha on Rav. And when we see the rooftop pointing downwards, that will represent a kasha on Rav Chonon. As we flip over the page before we learn the sugi itself, we've also used a diamond around the word tiyufta. You will notice that at the end of Loshen number 1, the Gemara comes to a conclusion against Rav Chonon bar Rava. In other words, Rav Chonon bar Rava, who represented an opinion of leniency, that Chaya Gasas, if the minig is to sell Behema Dakas, so you'll be able to sell them also, we will have a conclusive point against him at the end of Loshen number 1. Similarly, and when you get to Loshen number 3, there also appears a diamond, and again, a tiufta to Rav Chonon bar Rava, a refutation, if you will, of his opinion. Let us now turn to the Gemara itself, the sugya concerning the Mechira of Chaya Gasas. Tanan. We have a Tanaic source. Our Mishnah says, "Ein moichin lahem dubin v'aroyos v'lo kol dover shi'esh boi nezek l'rabim." One is not allowed to sell to them bears and lions and any other thing that will cause a public danger. Taimo di is bei nezek l'rabim. The prohibition is because it poses a danger. Hal les bei nezek l'rabim shori. According to our Mishnah, if you are dealing with a domesticated lion, for an example, that's the example you'll see in the Rashi. What's called, the Loshen is an ari tarbus, a cultured or domesticated lion, that would be allowed. Hence, the conclusion one is supposed to reach from the Mishnah is that a Chaya Gasa is able to be sold, and that would be a Kasha on Rav and a support to Rav Chonon. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabo Bar Ula. The teaching of the Mishnah that an Ari Tarbus is mutter to be sold, that's Ba'ari Shavur. It's a domesticated lion that is broken limbed, the Alibo de Rabbi Yehuda, and the Heter is only according to Rabbi Yehuda that we saw was Matir Bishvura. However, according to the Rabbonan that disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, it would not be allowed, and that is like Rav. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says you don't have to come on to a description of the domesticated lion as being broken limb. You can say, even if it's Sholem, however, Stam Ari Shavur, Hu, Eitzel Malacha. Your standard Ari is not capable of doing any Malachas. The Rashi that we'll take a look at is found on the third line from the top. Rav Ashi Omar Afilu Temo Bari Shalem. You can set up our Mishnah as referring to a non-broken limb lion. In other words, our Mishnah presented the possibility of a lion, if it's not dangerous, namely it's domesticated, it is allowed to be sold. So we don't, according to Rav Ashi, we don't have to describe the domesticated broken-limbed lion, but rather it's Shalem. Umas Nisan Rabbi Yehuda Hi Deshori B'Shvura. And our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah, which presents this leniency, would be a teaching according to Rabbi Yehuda that allowed for the Shvura, the broken-limbed animal, to be sold. V'chol Aroy Shvurin Hein Eitzel Malacha. As far as all lions are concerned, they are all incapable of doing malachas. Dari lav bar malachahu. A lion isn't going to do constructive activity. Avo rabbonon di asri b'shvura, but the rabbonon who would not allow a shvura to be sold, asri nami ba'ari. They would forbid the sale of an ari as well. Rabbiuda Nami Bishar Chayagasa, and Rabbiuda himself, with regard to other heavy undomesticated animals, Kigoin Aroid, the Tachtabirechaya, like an Orod, which is capable of Malacha, Kilakamon, Moide, the Eimoch, and Rabbiuda himself would agree that one is not allowed to sell it, a Chayagasa. So it would come out, as far as, like we saw before, with regard to the first approach. The second approach also serves as a defense of the opinion of Rav that a Chaya Gasa in general would not be allowed to be sold. Meisvei, we now have another question, and bearing in mind our markings, we know that when the house form is flipped over, it's going to pose a question on Rav Chonon. Kishem, the Tanaic source that appears in the frame here, as all Tanaic sources in our marking system are framed off. Kishem she'ein moichin lahem behem al gasa, kach ein moichin lahem chaya al gasa. Just like there is a prohibition of sales of behem al gasas to Gentiles, so too we don't sell chaya al gasas, large undomesticated animals. Even in a place where the minig might be to sell a light animal, light cattle, for example, sheep and goats, chaya al gasa ein mochin lahem. But it's emphasized in this source that sales of chaya al gasas are not allowed. Tiyufta d'Rav Chonon bar Rova. Is this a refutation of Rav Chonon? Tiufta, it certainly is. Ravina, Rami Masnisin Abraisa Umishani. Ravina, in dealing with the issue of sales of Chaya Gasas to the Gentiles, he presents what appears initially as a contradiction between the Mishnah and Braisa, and it goes on to resolve the contradiction. Of course, such a sugi will have bearing on the shitas of Rav and Rav Honan. However, this second lashon is not brought in with that machlokis in mind, but rather to resolve a Mishnah versus a Braisa. Tanan, let's read that again. Ravina Rami Masis and a Braisa Mishani. Ravina will raise a contradiction between a Mishnah and a Braisa and offer an answer. Tanan, on the one hand, you have the Mishnah that says, Ein Morchlem Dubin Va Royas Velo Koldover Shiesh Boy Nezek Larabim. Quote from our Mishnah. Taimo de Ispe Nezek. The prohibition is because they present a danger to the public. Hol lesbe nezek mokrin. However, if they would not pose a danger, let's talk about a lion that is not going to be mazik. Mokrin, one would be allowed to sell it. V'raminhi, we have a contradictory source. It says, Kishem she'ein mokrin behem ogasa, kach ein mokrin chayogasa. The havamina right now is a lion. According to this second Tanaic source, a chayogasa, a lion, under no circumstances may be sold. The first source indicated that there are possibilities of a lion, yes, being sold. Umeshani, resolution number one. Be'ari shavur v'bli berhuda, the source that allows, that we intimated, that a lion could be sold, if it's a lion that's domesticated, that is an allowance, that's when it's an Ari Shavur, and that's only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, whom we've already seen to offer kulis with regard to a Behema Gasa Shavura. So the allowance of the sale of the lion is, you're talking about a lion that's Shavura, a domesticated lion. That's Shavura. Rav Ashi Omar, Stam Ari, Shavuhu Eitzel Malacha. Rav Ashi says you don't have to say that the lion is physically broken limbed, but your Stam domesticated lion is not capable of doing Malacha. And that would be the first source that said if it's non-dangerous, it can be sold. Hence, a domesticated shalem lion could be sold to the goyim. Maskiflo Rav Nachman man lemalon de'ari chayogasahi. He raises his objection to the entire need to present these two sources as contradictory. It becomes contradictory only if you make the assumption that an ari is a chayagasa. Notice in the two sources we have dashed underline expressions. The first source has aroyos, dashed underline, and the second source has chayagasa. And if you work with the assumption that a lion is a chayagasa, then you'll run into a contradiction. However, who says that we have to define an ari as a chayagasa? Dilmo chayodaka hi. It may very well be that a lion is a chayodaka, and as such, if it's a chaya daka that's not dangerous, it can be sold. The other source wasn't talking at all about a chaya daka. So the second source that restricts the sale of a chaya gasa, that's a separate topic. There's no contradiction in the first place. Rav Ashi, Dayek Masnisin Umoysif Tyufta. Rav Ashi, after careful inferences that are drawn from the Mishnah, he then goes on to raise a kasha, and we'll see it's a kasha on Rav Chonan. So let's first see what inferences he draws from this source. Tanan, Ein Morchin Lehem Dubin Varoyos Velo Kol Dover Shiesh Boi Nezek L'Rabin. The source that forbids the sale of lions, amongst other things, is Taimo de Is Be Nezek. The prohibition is because it poses a danger. It can damage. Ha Les Be Nezek Mochrin. If, however, it doesn't pose any danger, one is allowed to sell it. To sell what? To sell the lion. And what kind of lion doesn't pose a danger? A domesticated lion. The Taimo Ari. And the whole allowance, in other words, the inference from the Mishnah that that suggests an allowance, is only because we're dealing with a lion. The Stam Ari Shovu Eisim Malacha. Your standard lion is considered as if it were broken with regard to Malacha. Avol Midi Achrina, the Ovid Malacha, lo. But any other creature that is capable of doing Malacha, for example, any other Chayagasa, that's capable of doing Malacha, that would be forbidden. Tiufto de Rav Chonon bar Rava Tiufto. This would be a repudiation of Rav Chonon's position. Rav Chonon, who felt that we can allow the sale of a Chaya Gasa, this approach that Rav Ashi is taking shows that it's not allowed. The Chaya Gasa Mihas my Malacha Avda. What Malacha is a Chaya Gasa, an undomesticated large animal capable of performing? Amar Abaye, Amarli Mor Yehuda. Abaye says that Mor Yehuda told him, Debei Mar Yuchni Tachni Rechayim Barodi, that the household of Mar Yuchni used to operate grindstones with Arodi. Arodi, another type of Chaya Gasa. So we see that a Chaya Gasa is something that is capable of doing Malacha, and once you introduce the Malacha factor, you realize that you're getting involved with the whole Shabbos consideration, and that's why we don't allow the sales of these to the Goyim. As you can see in the Gemara, we have a slash marking that indicates that the piece of Gemara that follows is of a new nature. Before we go into the Gemara itself, let's take a look at the topic heading we've assigned to the to this sugya in the outside margin. We have a nosei and mivneh, a topic heading and structural note combined. The triangle is featured. Biruroi shel Rabbi Zera. We're going to try to clarify. Rabbi Zera is going to try to clarify. Mi Omar Hadin, who is the author of the law that says Chaya Gasa Harehi Kebeim Odaka Lepirchus. In order to appreciate this din of Pirchus, which we, when we saw this initially, we glossed over it, the best thing for us to do would be to look at the Rashi on the bottom of Tes Zayin Omen Aleph. The topic of Pirchus arises when one wants to slaughter for eating purposes a kosher variety animal. Here we're going to be focusing on a Chaya Gasa. And the animal that you're interested in slaughtering is dangerously ill. In other words, if you were to leave it any longer, the animal would probably die on its own. So one has an interest in slaughtering it. There is, however, a fear that if the animal is dangerously ill, it could be that the animal died before the shechita was completed. How are we to determine that the animal was first slaughtered and then it died? In other words, it died as a result of the shechita, not because of its sickliness. So in order to determine that, we are going to look at post-shechita signs, movement signs on the animal. If it's capable of performing certain movements, it's a sign that at the point that it was slaughtered, it had sufficient life in it to enable these subsequent signs or movements to take place. And with that, then we'll be able to see that retroactively, the animal did not die out of, let us say, out of because of its sickness and merely the feel of the knife to its neck. Let's glance at the Rashi, as we said, on Tes Zayin Omid Aleph, toward the bottom in the wide lines at the beginning of the Gemara commentary. Kebehemo daka lepirchus. Kida omar gabi behemo misukenes b'shitas chulin. The sugya is discussed in Maseches Chulin dealing with the sickly animal. Behemo daka sheposhta yoda achashchitasa. A light animal, for example, a sheep that was very sick, and after it was slaughtered, it straightened out its arm, its leg. if it did that, it was poshet. It's an outward movement. Veloi hichzira, and didn't contract it or it didn't bend it inwards. Asura, it is not allowed to be consumed. The behema misukenesi veino muteris ad shetefarches. The sheep that we just discussed was sickly before its shechita, and it's not going to be mutter until it does pirchus. And if it doesn't do the required pirchus, it's viewed as if it died before the shechita. A one-directional movement of the limb, the outward, the poshet is like the straightening out of the leg, is a simple, we'll say, nervous reaction of the animal, a nerve reaction that takes place when an animal's soul departs it, when it dies. But it's not a sign that it experienced, that it died through the slaughtering. Avol gasa, however, when you're dealing with a behemo gasa, a large kosher animal that happened to be sick, bein poshta velo kofofa, whether it straightened out the leg without curving it back in, bein kofofa velo poshta, or it was a one-directional movement where the animal curved in its leg but didn't stretch it out again, pirchus hi ukshera, that constitutes the required pirchus, and it will be kosher. And that this one-directional leg flexing is a good sign of pirchus when you're dealing with a behema gasa. However, with regard to a behema daka, we require more movement in order to show that it had we'll call it a sign of life, even though we're talking about the moment after shechita, but that it had a sign of life, that during the shechita it was still considered sufficiently alive and not having died because of its ill state. Now, in the Gemara on Omid Beis, we see, after our slash, Rabbi Zeira's name, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see that Rabbi Zeira has been written in with a long vertical dashed line that follows. That indicates that all of the lines of Gemara that you see here are part of Rabbi Zeira's presentation. As we scan down the page, we're going to see the use of triangles. And as we said, the triangles are different stages of Rebbe Zeira's attempting to clarify who said the din that we will see shortly. Omar Rebbe Zeira, Ki Havinon Beirav Yehuda, when we were learning in the Yeshiva of Yehuda, Omar Lon, Rebbe Yehuda, said to us, Gamiru minoi homilso to migavro rabo shmiali, learn from me the following teaching that I and it is a teaching that I heard from a great man, velo yodano imirav imishmuel, but I don't know if the teaching was from Rav or Shmuel. Rabbi Zeira being let's say more Rabbi Yehuda being the generation after Rav and Shmuel, so he doesn't know. He was unsure who authored the following. Chaya gasa harehi kibehema daka lepirchus. The chaya gasa, if it happened to be very sickly and you slaughtered it, it will take on the din of a behema daka for pirchus, meaning we'll have to see a double action, double flexing of the leg in order to establish that it died as a result of the shechita and not as a result of its sickly state. Rabbi Zeira continues telling us the story. Ki asoi lekurkunya ashkachte lerevchia bar Ashi v'yosef ikomar mishmei de Shmuel. When I came to Kurkunya, the name of a place, I found Revchia saying over in the name of Shmuel, Chaya gaso harehi kibei madako lepirchus. This was the halacha that Rabbi Zeira presented, and he wasn't sure who the author is. Here we see clearly it was said in the name of Shmuel. Amina, so Rabbi Zeira says, I now figured, as a result of hearing Rav Chiya bar Ashi, I now figured, Shma Amina Mishmei de Shmuel Itmar, that it was a halacha said in the name of Shmuel. In other words, I originally heard Rabbi Yehuda with a doubt Was it Rav or Shmuel? Well, at this point, I can conclude that it was that Rabbi Yehuda heard it in the name of Shmuel. Kiasoi l'sura, Rabbi Zera continues telling us that when I went to Sura, Ashkachte l'rabo bar Yirmiah, another, it's a different name, and we've used underlinings to emphasize the name so you can compare it to whatever we saw before. He says, Rabbi Zera says, upon arriving in Sura, I found Rabo bar Yirmiah, the Yosef v'komarle mishmei da Rav. Notice with our double underlining, we're emphasizing the critical name. So he is saying that the halacha was said in the name of Rav. What halacha? Chaya gasa rehi kebehema daka lepirchus. So Amina, Rabbi Zera says, then I figured Shmamina itmar mishmei de Rav vi itmar mishmei de Shmuel. That it's a halacha that was said over in the name of Rav and Shmuel. You might want to note parenthetically, or actually even more directly, and Rashi tells us this, Rav Yehuda, who was in doubt, who the author was, Rav Yehuda himself, learned by Rav and Shmuel. Historically, he started by Rav, and then when Rav passed away, he moved over to Shmuel. Rabbi Zera continues, Ki slikis lahasam, when I went to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkachte l'Rav Asi the Yosef v'komar, I found Rav Asi saying over the following. Omar Rav Chamo bar Gurya Mishmei de Rav Chayo Gasa Rehi Behema Daka Lepirchus. That's the halacha that we have been dealing with. Amri Le. Amri Le means I, Rabbi Zera, who's the speaker, I ask Rav Asi. V'lo savar lo mor, deman mora deshmaitzo, rabo bar Yirmiah. Do you not hold that the one who says it over in the name of Rav is really rabo bar Yirmiah? In other words, I heard you quoting Rav Chamo bar Gurya. You can see his name is dashed about three lines up from here. I, says Rabbi Zera, heard you, Rav Asi, saying that Rav Chamo bar Gurya is responsible for quoting it in the name of Rav, but I heard, and you can use the arrows to navigate here, and you'll see where it was just a few lines above that, where I heard Rav's Shita presented through Rabo bar Yirmiah. Omarle, so Rav Asi says back to Rabbi Zera, Pasya Uchma, literally black pot. It's an indication of someone who is very, very dedicated to Torah study, so much so that he almost forgets his normal lifestyle actions, and he allows himself to get blackened, so to speak. Rashi describes Talmidei Chachamim as not washing their clothing because of their total immersion in Torah learning. So he says to him, Pasya Uchma, so we mentioned black pot, but it's a compliment in terms of his dedication. You, a Torah scholar, very dedicated one to Torah learning, Minoyu Minoch Testayim Shmaitza. Between the two of us, we will have something conclusive to present. And it's as follows. Itmar Nami, Omar Rabbi Zera, Omar of Asi, Omar Rabo Bar Yirmiah, Omar Rav Chamo Bar Gurya. In other words, the Rabo Bar Yirmiah that Rabbi Zera heard presenting Rav's halacha, he really got it from Rav Chamo Bar Gurya, who in turn got it from Rav Omar Rav. Chayogaso harehi kebehema dako lepirchus. There's a Rashi we can look at. Tistayim Shmaitza Te Omer Shmua B'Shem Oimra. We will be able to say over the teaching in the name of its author, De Hochi Have, that it took place thusly. The Rav Chamo Bar Gurya Kibla Me Rav. That Rav Chamo Bar Gurya, he is the one to have received it directly from Rav. The Rabo, namely Rabo Bar Yirmiah, Kibla Me Rav Chamo. He received it from Rav Chama, and Hence, the chain of names appears as the Gemara said in its Maskona. All of the names that we underlined at the end of the of that particular section of Gemara. Continuing, Ein Boinin Imohem Basilki. Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chana Omar Rabbi Yochanan Sholosh Basilka Ois Hein. There are three types of basilki structures. One, Shel Malche Ovdei Kechovim. One is a basilki that's owned by the by Gentile kings. Two, Vishel Merchatzois, basilkis that are associated with bathhouses. Vishel Oitzoros. And basilkis that are associated with Otzoros, Rashi says, L'sgulas hamelech boinin binyan chazak. As a good sign for a king, they used to build some type of solid structure. Omar Rava. In this particular piece of Gemara, there will be two Lishonos presenting that will present Rava. This is the first, and you can see the end of the next line, there's an Iko Diamri squiggle underlined indicating an alternative Lashon, and on the line after that, the Beis, the second Lashon, appears. Omar Rava. Shnayim Leheter V'Echod V'Isur. We just mentioned there were three Basilkos. Two of them would be allowed in construction. In other words, a Jew can help construct them. One of them prohibited, giving you a total of three structures. The Simon, in order to remember which one is prohibited, remember the following Pasuk. Le'esor Malcheim Bezikin. For our purposes, you just see that the word Le'esor can also mean to forbid that which is king related. In other words, the royal basilki, the number one. We've also dashed underline in addition to the word Malcheim, two lines above that, the word Malche, that is to create this connection that the Pasuk which prohibits is that one, the Basilki of the Gentile kings. As we saw when we were presenting the Mishnah, these are structures, that which the Mishnah answers are structures that were used in the execution of human beings. The Basilki was explained by Rashi on the Mishnah, and he points out that it's a large, tall structure. People were judged there and then eventually pushed off of its height and fall to their death. Iko Diamri, continuing in the Gemara with a second version, Omar Rava, Kulon Leheter, all Basilkis are allowed. But did we not learn Ein Boinin Imohen Basilki Gardom Itstadio Bimo? And if you look at that, which we've emphasized with our dashed underlines, you see Ein Boinin, and we dot underlined also the word Basilki, that it's Osir. Emo. So the Gemara answers the Mishnah that forbids is to be understood as follows. The quote here says shell gardom, or shell itzad, it means it's the basilki of a gardom, or the basilki of the itzadio, or the that's vishel itzad, vishel bima. Those are the things that are forbidden. However, the three basilkis that were mentioned before, namely shell malchi of the gechovim, shell mechatzos, and otzoros, that is not included in the prohibition of the Mishnah. Let's glance at the Rashi. Basilki shel gardon. Basilki shel Rashi says, Avo basilki stamoshi the diras malocha muteris. But a standard basilki that's designed for serve as a domicile for kings, that is okay. Tono Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that begins here and continues quite a bit down the next Omid, Daf Yud Zayin. We see a nosei, a topic heading that accompanies this Gemara in the outside margin. Maisa b'Rabbi Eliezer shenipas al yedei haminin. This Tanaic source presents a story where Rabbi Eliezer was arrested by the minin, the Minin are a group of people that we've seen earlier in this Masechta. We'll refer to them as non-believers, rebels with regard to Judaism. So he was arrested by the Minim, the Shukrar, and eventually set free. And he, we will see, engages in introspection as to why this unfortunate event befell him in the first place. So the source begins, Kishenipas Rabbi Lezer Laminus, Heleu Lagardom Lidon. When the Minim arrested him and attempted to force him into idolatry, they brought him up to the Gardom. The Gardom is an expression that we saw already before in the Mishnah. And Rashi on the Mishnah describes it as a place for judging capital offenders. So they brought him up to this, we'll call it execution site. Amar Loi Oisei Hegmon, the officer said to Rabbi Eliezer, Zokein Shekamoyscho, Yasig, Vorem, Betelim, Halolu, someone, a sage like you, a wise man like you, should be involved with this foolishness. And he's trying to he's making a reference to Torah learning. He says, why is someone like you, someone as honorable as you, involved with these foolish things? He's trying to denigrate the Torah. Omar lo, so Rabbi Eliezer said, Ne'mon olai hadayon, the judge is trustworthy unto me. Kasovro so hegmon olav hu omer, the Goyish official there thought that when he declared Ne'eman Olai HaDayon, that the judge is trustworthy unto me, he was referring, that Rabbi Lezer was referring to this Hegmon. And we know the source that he was not at all referring to him, but rather he was referring to the Almighty. He was justifying from his standpoint the ruling of God. Omar Loi, the Hegmon, said to Rabbi Lezer, Hoyol ve'mantani olecho, since you have accepted me upon you, Dimus is an expression of oath. He's technically speaking, it's the name of an idol. So he's swearing in the name of his deity, Poterato, in other words, I declare you exempt. So you have the Rabbi Lezer at the threshold of being executed, acknowledging his faith in God, the Hegmon not quite understanding his true intention, rather thinking he was referring to the Hegmon himself. The Hegmon frees him. Kishibola Beso, Nichus Tamidov Etzlo Lenachamo, Velo Kibel of Tanchuman. When he entered his house, his students came to offer him consolation after going through this traumatic experience, and he didn't accept the words of comfort. Amalo Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva piped up and said, Rebbe, Tarsheni Loimar Dover Echo Mimashele Madatani, allow me to say a point that you taught me. Amalo Emor, Sir Rabbi Lezer says, okay, let's hear it. Amaloi, Rabbi Akiva says, Rebbe Shemo Minus Boli Yodcha, Vehin Acho, Vealov Nipasta. Maybe some matter that you benefited from, a min, you may have received a sense of benefit or enjoyment from a min, from one of these rebels, that caused you, as we said, enjoyment, and as a result of that, you had to pay for that, we'll call it illicit enjoyment, through going through this traumatic experience. Amalo, so Rabbi Lezer says, woo, Akiva, his kartani, you reminded me of something. And before we go on to this particular point, you will see on the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara a long marking, Rabbi Eliezer. And the Rabbi Eliezer's comment to Rabbi Akiva, or the reference to that which he was just reminded of, is featured in all of the lines that are opposite this long marking. So Rabbi Eliezer goes on to say, you just reminded me, I was once walking in the upper marketplace of the city of Sipori, and there's one version of the Talmud that appears in the Vatshol edition says that you could read over here, Mosasi Echod Mitamide Yeshua Notri. I met up with a student of one of the founders of Christianity, the Yankov Ishkvar Sachanya Shmo, and his name was Yankov from the hamlet of Sachanya. Omar Li, and this Yankov said to me, Kosev b'Torascham, it says in your Torah, Lo Sovi Esnan Zoino Beis Hashem Elokecha. The Torah forbids that which was paid to a harlot to then be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, if someone paid a harlot for her services, that item cannot be brought subsequently as a Beis HaMikdash, as a Beis HaMikdash donation or dedication. Let us say, though, that a harlot received payment for services, and the thought arose to use that to construct a bathroom for the Kohen Gadol. Ma'u lasos heimenu beis hakiseh leKohen Gadol. The Rashi points out that the Kohen Gadol had a special office in the Beis HaMikdash in which he resided for a week before the Yom Kippur Avoda took place. Can we take the Esnan Zona and use it for the construction of a bathroom facility? Velo amarti lo klum. And I, says Rabbi Lazar, I didn't answer him. I heard his question and I didn't answer. Omar li, so this min, Yankov, said to me, Kach limdani, and once again, there's another girsa here that says Kach limdani Yeshu hanotri, that the Yeshu told me the following: Ki me esnan zoyna kibotzo, viad esnan zoyna yoshuvu. He cited a posuk in Micha to deal with this. Mi mokam hatinoifes bohu, from a place of literally of dirt, it came. L'mokam hatinoifes yilechu, it shall go to a place of dirt, creating the feeling that since the Esnan was used for something immoral in the first place, something of something unacceptable or something dirty, if you will. So, it, for the construction of a bathroom, which is also a facility used for the purpose of waste, so it can go to that. In other words, it came from waste, it goes back to waste. V'hinani hadover. And Rabbi Lezer says, I like that. I had pleasure from hearing that. Al yedei ze nitpasti leminus v'avarti al mashekosuv b'toro harchek me'olel darkecha zuminus v'al tikra v'al pesach beisa zu horishus. Upon my realizing that I just benefited from the min, I was thereby in violation of that which the Torah says, distance yourself from it. That's harchek oleho darkecha, that your path should be kept away from them. Zuminus, this is a reference, the Torah is exhorting us, stay away from them. And the pasuk in Mishle also says, v'al tikra v'al pesach besa zu horashus. Stay away from governmental attention. Don't get too close to them. Rashi points out, they have a tendency to try to set their eyes upon the wealthy and eventually kill them to take their money. The Ika the Amri, the Gemara continues with another version of this pasuk, of this presenting the teaching that this pasuk conveys. Harchek me'olel darkecha zu minus v'horashus, that both are referred to in this part of the pasuk. Stay away, keep your path away from them, from the non-believers or the rebels, and from the governments. The altikra v'al pesach besa, don't draw near unto her house, zu zoina. That's a reference to harlots. The Gemara asks, well, v'kama, how far should one stay away? Amar Rav Chisda, arba amos, not to draw 4 amos close to the door of a harlot. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.